So, because you can always spend more than you make, you must develop a power over purchase. A power over purchase. Why is it that I have people come into counseling in our offices or call me on the radio that make $100 or $120 or $130 or $150,000 a year and they're broke? And then I have somebody call me up just a little while later making $45,000 a year and they got money in the 401k, they're out of debt and got an emergency fund. How is that? One developed a power over purchase and had a plan, and the other one is what's known as clueless. And you can not be clueless or you can be clueless regardless of your income. But income's not your answer. Everything will be okay when I make more. No, it won't. If you don't change your ways, when you make more, you just go get a bigger car payment. Go get a bigger house payment. Lots of Americans celebrate a $300 a month raise with a $400 new car payment. Lots of people do that. And you'll never get ahead until you develop that power over purchase. So, let's look at these five things. If you do these five things when you're buying a major purchase, for most people, again, that's around $300 or more. It may be different in your household, but establish what it is, because Sharon and I have a rule. We've established that number, and if we're ever going over that number, ever under any circumstances, we talk about it first and we go through these five steps. The first one is wait overnight. Wait overnight. Why? So you can kind of get over that high. You can kind of let calm down, back away from it, cool down. It'll be there tomorrow. Oh no, they've just got one. What is it, a Picasso? You got 16 in the back, shrink wrapped on a pallet. Shut up. And if they don't, you can order it on eBay cheaper than when you get home anyway. Shut up. Wait overnight. Calm down, walk away, go look at some other options. Think about it a little bit. If it's a big purchase and God wants you to have it, it'll be there when you get back. Wait overnight. If it's gone, here's an idea. Possibly it was God saying,
no.
He never says no to me. Chuck Swindoll says there's three answers to prayer. Yes, no, and grow. These are possibilities. It's kind of like the old salesman's joke. Guy in the car lot's selling, and he's sitting there in the little closing room, you know, the small room with the little round table where they're trying to get the people to sign up. And he's got them there, and the little couple's getting real close to buying, but they're not quite there. And they said, now, wait a minute, stop. And he went, oh, no, here we go. And they said, before we make a major decision at our house, we always take time overnight and pray about this. And he said, well, I'm not sure the car will be here tomorrow, but I got an idea. I'll tell you what. I'll stand up and we'll just sanctify this room right here. I'll walk outside and you guys can pray about it and I'll come back in when you're through. You just let me know. You take as much time as you want. So the little couple goes in there and they're just praying and talking to God. In a few minutes, they knock on the door, come out, so ask, invite the salesman back in. The salesman comes back in and they say, we've talked to God and we don't think we're supposed to do this. And he says, excuse me just a second. And he goes over in the corner and bows his head. He says, God wants to talk to y'all again. Some people are just desperate, aren't they? Carefully consider your buying motives is number two. No amount of stuff is going to equal contentment or fulfillment. And if you're in a blended family situation, a divorced family situation, one guy told me in that, he said, Dave, tell people, please tell people, no amount of spending will get rid of any guilt you've got either. Don't medicate dysfunction with spending. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Now, I'm not against stuff. I want you to get some stuff. I just don't want your stuff to get you. So is this a need or is this a want? Let me answer that question for you. It's a want. Needs are food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and utilities. Food. Looks like most of you are doing pretty good. Clothing. No naked people. Transportation. Oh, you want me to walk? It might do some of us good. Walk a little bit. I don't want you to walk 20 miles, but, you know, we have buses to ride. You're kidding. People die. They don't die. They just get on the bus and pay and ride. There's people that do that every day. Do I want you to do that? No. You could go get you a $500 garage sale car and ride back and forth to work, couldn't you? For a little while, and that's your living like no one else, so later you get to live like no one else. So a nicer car, a nicer house, nicer clothing, a better situation is not a need by definition. It's a want. Is it okay to buy once? Say yes.
Yes.
But don't call up and tell me I needed a new car. You didn't. You wanted. We were forced to buy a bigger house. They had a gun. The language that we use is pretty amazing, isn't it? And it's reflective of how much rationalization we've done inside of our own hearts. And so we've just got to stop and go, it's a want, I've got the money, I'm buying it, it fits in the budget, shut up. Or it's a want, and right now, we don't have the emergency fund funded and we're fighting debt. Right now, we're not doing a want. Right now, we're going to stick with need. And we'll come back and do the wants later. And I've taught you how to do that over and over and over again. You just kind of have to think through this. See, what happens is I think we get happiness and fun confused. You can buy fun, but you can't buy happiness. It's fun to go on a cruise. I've been on several. They're great. If you hadn't, you ought to. You know, it's fun. It's fun to go on vacation, take your kids to Disney World, isn't it? It's fun. It's fun to go to the beach. It's fun to have a boat. It's fun to go to the movies. It's fun to go out and eat. These are all fun things. It's fun to have some new clothes. It's fun. But they're not happiness. Because I figured out if you eat enough lobster, it tastes like soap. All this stuff has an end to it, doesn't it? It's the old preacher's joke. I never saw a rider truck fall on a hearse. You're not going to take it with you anyway. So, you know, look through this. Think about it. It's like Job. Because happiness is different. Happiness is like when I'm tucking my kid in and praying with him. He looks up at me and he's a cool young stud teenager boy. And we've been praying. He says, Dad, I love you. That's good. He was cute when he was 4. It's cool when he's 15. That's good. That's happiness, isn't it? You don't buy that one. You can't write that check. So buy you some fun. But don't chase happiness with money. You'll never catch it. It's a bully in the schoolyard. It's like the story Joe Land, the great motivational speaker, tells. He says it's kind of like when we get ready to go to school. We say, oh, I'm going to kindergarten. And then you get to kindergarten and you go, I'll be happy if I was in first grade and learning to read. And then you get to first grade and go, I'll be happy if I was cool like those sixth graders that run the school like a mafia. And then you get to sixth grade and you look over there in the middle school and go, whoa, sports, cheerleaders, changing classes with different teachers. You get a bad one, you're not there long. It's good. And then you're in junior high and you go, I'll be happy when I get to high school because I'll have my driver's license. And then somebody's brother comes home from college. He says, college is cool, man. They don't even care if you go to class. Man, I'll be happy when I get to college. And then you get to college and your net worth is a half a box of no-dos, right? You know, man, if I could just get out of college and meet that special someone and get married and have 2.3 kids and a picket fence. And then you get out of college and you meet that special someone and you have 2.3 kids, you go, gosh, I want to go back to college. I'll be happy when you get out of diapers and I don't have to do diapers anymore. I'll be happy when the teenagers are gone. I'll be happy when they get married and have little kids so I can change diapers. If you don't watch, happiness is a bully in the schoolyard. It continually draws a line and backs up. And when you step across the line, he backs up and draws it again. Happiness is where you are right now. Claim it for yourself. Don't let stuff get in that equation. You'll chase it and you'll never catch it. The old saying is, he with the most toys when he dies is dead. Never buy anything you don't understand is number 3. Never buy anything you don't understand, particularly financial products. Don't buy insurance if you can't tell me how it works and why you need it. Don't buy investments if you can't tell me how they work. Now, we're going to cover insurance in the insurance lesson so you'll understand it. We're going to cover investments in the investment lesson so you'll understand it. But a key in those, even after I teach you, is don't buy it until you understand it. And if you don't get it when you went through with me, go through it again and go through it again and talk to somebody, learn from somebody. Don't buy things you don't understand. Well, Dave, I'm very good at that. I research everything. I don't buy anything I don't understand. Right. And that DVD player is at home blinking 12. Can't even set the clock on it. Number 4, consider the opportunity cost on your money. Opportunity cost on your money is when you put money here, by definition, it cannot be here. If I put $4,000, $5,000 in a Roth IRA, by definition, I can't go on a cruise with that money. If I spend the money on a cruise, by definition, I can't put that money in that Roth IRA. So you lose the opportunity of the cruise when you do the Roth. When you do the cruise, you lose the opportunity of the Roth. One of the ways you're going to have a cost associated with having done something with your money. You lose the cost. A really good example of this is a guy I know that teaches investments and sells investments for a living. And I was on a stage with him, and he said, the story he told was this. He said, when I was young, in my 20s, I set a goal to buy myself a brand new Mercedes. I was driving this old junky diesel rabbit car. I hated it. And I set a goal to buy myself a brand new Mercedes. And he said, Dave, I wanted a 1986 Mercedes. And he said, Dave, the model that I wanted was $40,000. And I set $40,000 aside in a mutual fund. And I promised myself the first year I made over $100,000 selling investments, I was going to take the $40,000 out of my mutual fund and go buy my dream 1986 Mercedes. The story goes like this. He took his $40,000 out because he hit $100,000 that year in his 20s. Sharp guy. Went over to the Mercedes dealer. Young kid gets out of a beat-up diesel rabbit. They wouldn't even pay any attention to him. The salesman's kind of got his nose up in there. He says, so how are you going to pay for this, kid? He said, cash. I just took it out of my mutual fund. The guy says, where can we test drive? He said, Dave, I got in the car. And he said, it was my dream. I could smell that leather, that Mercedes feel, that Mercedes smell. Everything was there. He said, Dave, I looked out the window. I saw that emblem out there, and that emblem was saying, you're a success. And he said, in case I forgot to look out there, there was one right there on the steering wheel. He said, I drove that car home. He said, they let me take it home. That's called the puppy dog close. RCA did it with televisions in the 50s, and it became popular after that. They'd send the television home for the evening. All the neighborhood would come around and see the television, because televisions were rare at that point. And by then, you were so emotionally bought into it, you had to go take money back. You couldn't take the TV back. You're locked in once you test drive emotionally. So they let him take it home. He took it home. His wife says, that's it, honey. You've been wanting this. You've saved for it. It's been your deal. Your neighbors came over and said, man, you are the dog. You are killing it. He said, I made the mistake, though, Dave. I picked up my financial calculator, and I put $40,000 in there. And he said, and I put in what mutual funds were averaging at that time. And he said, I couldn't do it. I took the car back. And I left my $40,000 in that mutual fund. And I went, later on, earned a little bit of money, and I got me a $6,000, an $8,000 car. And 12 years later, I'm on the stage with him. He's driving a Rolls Royce now. He said, Dave, just for the fun of it, I left that one mutual fund alone. I never added anything to that $40,000. And here I sit 12 years later, and that $40,000 is now over $300,000. And he said, for fun of it, I was riding around the other day in my Rolls Royce, and I pulled up next to this guy in a 1986 Mercedes. He said, it was in prime condition. He said, I rolled down my window, and he said, I don't want to be smart aleck or anything. He said, but what's that car worth? The guy said, man, I just bought it. It's perfect. He said, I think I got a deal on it, but it's about book. He said, I paid $4,000 for it. So in 12 years, $40,000 either became $4,000 or it became $300,000 plus. Now, is it bad to buy you a new Mercedes? No, I'm not against that at all. But you need to think about that decision when you're doing it. Because you don't want to drive junk your whole life and not have a good life. I want you to get you a good car, okay? But you got to think about the opportunity cost and think about that story. When you're getting ready to plunk money down on something, what else could I do with that money that I might like the results better long term? The last one is seek the counsel of your spouse. For those of you that are single in here, raise your hand, singles. For those of you that are single in here, set yourself up with an accountability partner, someone that will hurt your feelings for your own good and you can bounce big purchases off of. For those of us that are married, seek the counsel of your spouse. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, and he will have no lack of gain. Guys, listen to your wives. We're from the South. If my wife gets one of those feelings, if she gets one of those feelings and I go against one of those feelings, it costs me at least $10,000 every time I do. I don't go against those feelings. That's like Larry Burkett used to say, ladies, that does not give you permission to become the Holy Spirit. It said virtuous, not barking chihuahua. Virtuous wife. And for that matter, I think you could probably just switch those, and I don't think God would be mad at us if we said, who could find a virtuous husband? for his worth is far above rubies. The heart of his wife safely trusts him, and she will have no lack of gain. I don't think Jesus would be too mad at us if we switch that, because the principle's still there, isn't it? Trust and work with the one that you're supposed to be one with before you make a decision. Don't come home with a $32,000 bass boat and go, "Look what I did!" and expect anything but being broke. If you will listen to the counsel of your spouse, you will check the opportunity cost and think it through with your money. If you will wait overnight and check your motives, if you'll do those five steps before you do a major purchase, and you're thinking about this stuff, you will begin to win with money. You'll limit your purchases, you'll make purchases that you're proud of, and you look back 10 years later and go, "That was a good idea." Have you ever bought something that 10 years later you look back and go, "I'm glad I bought that"? Say yes. Those were wise purchases. You probably went through most of these steps and didn't even realize it, but now here's five steps that you always review if you want to have financial peace. Thanks.